Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. When you start talking about the greatest coaches in basketball history, the conversation starts and ends with one name. John Wooden, who led UCLA to 10 NCAA championships in 12 years, had a lifetime winning percentage of 804, and is a member of the Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield as both a coach and player. After leading the Bruins from 1948 to 1975, Wooden became an avuncular revered figure in retirement until his death at age 99 in 2010. Now he's the subject of a new biography by one of college basketball's best chroniclers, Seth Davis, a senior writer at Sports Illustrated and CBS Sports Analyst. Wooden, A Coach's Life, traces Wooden's evolution from a hard-nosed guard at Purdue to a March Madness figure from Pauley Pavilion. Seth Davis, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be with you.
Now, you live in Los Angeles. What is his reputation in town like today?
Godlike. he is very highly revered, and for so much more than winning a lot of NCAA championships. I mean, obviously, that's the crux of it. But you know what he went on to do the last 35 years of his life was really what he always wanted to be all along, and that's just be a teacher and talk about life and principles and how to live your life and how to achieve success and how to define success properly. But, you know, over the last, especially the last 10 or 15 years of his life, you know, there was so much written about him, and all these books came out, and, you know, all of the books were either by John Wooden or with John Wooden or for John Wooden. So I wanted to write a book about John Wooden, about the man, not the myth. He had been presented as this two-dimensional character, never had any flaws, never had a bad day, never had a problem, and that's not real life. So I really wanted to write about that third dimension, which is not to say that this book is a takedown, far from it, but it is the real story of, for example, his competitive nature, how hard he was on referees. He had a very controversial reputation with respect to his treatment of officials. He was not always emotionally connected to his players. Many of his players left their experiences playing for him with very real ambivalence towards him, if not outright resentment, if they were one of the players who didn't play a whole lot. He was very thin-skinned and susceptible to outside pressure. The 12 years that they were winning NCAA championships were, in many respects, the 12 unhappiest years of his life because he had created this fast-moving train and he didn't know how to get off. You know, he was like a lot of great achievers. He was driven by insecurity, and a lot of that coming of because of someone coming of age during the Great Depression and losing your life savings on your wedding day and understanding that whatever you have today could be gone tomorrow. And that led him, after his retirement, to tell a lot of stories about his life that didn't exactly jibe with what happened. And you know, then you have the specter of a man named Sam Gilbert, who is a longtime UCLA booster, who over a period of many years lavished favors on John Wooden's players that was in direct violation of NCAA rules. Wooden did not create the situation, did not approve of it, but he didn't do a whole lot about it, knew a lot of what was going on, and the only reason he didn't know more is because he did not want to know more, and that doesn't exactly jibe with how we think about John Wooden. So, you know, life is complicated, and like any great achiever, he was a complicated man. He was not a perfect man. He did not live a perfect life, but he was an extraordinary man, and he lived an extraordinary life. And I feel very privileged to have had the opportunity to tell the story of his life.
What were some of the innovations he brought to coaching college basketball and to the game itself?
Well, you know, he, as you mentioned, he played for Purdue. You know, a lot of people don't realize how good of a player John Wooden was. You know, most people can't even tell you where he went to college. But, you know, based on his 3 years playing for Purdue, you know, I think you make the very easy to make the argument that in the first 50 years of basketball, remember basketball was invented in 1891, over the first 50 years or so of the game, John Wooden was one of the top 10 players. In fact, he was inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame as a player 4 years before he won his first championship as a coach. That's how good of a player he was. He played for a man at Purdue named Piggy Lambert, who was a little guy, went about 5'5". And even though this was a time when there were no blacks playing and there was a rule in basketball that after every made basket, the teams went to half court and had a jump ball, Piggy Lambert believed in up-tempo basketball and was considered the father of the fast break. So when John Wooden left Indiana State in 1948, went out to UCLA, he brought the style, what they called racehorse basketball, fire wagon basketball, he brought it to the West Coast. And, you know, he was Rick Pitino, you know, many decades before Rick Pitino with his thoughts on up-tempo basketball, and it took him a long time to, you know, continue to have those ideas evolve and then most importantly get the type of personnel he needed to execute it properly. But His first championship in 1964 was a running, pressing team that did not have a single starter over 6'5". So for a guy who has a reputation of being a very straight-laced, conservative Midwesterner, he was extremely innovative and forward-thinking in terms of his approach to the game of basketball.
Now, in terms of the role of the coach, a lot of people point out, and maybe some critically, that college basketball is really a coach's game. The coaches are usually the biggest personalities. Even at your alma mater, we look at a guy like Coach K at Duke. How much of that is owed to John Wooden's role, winning an astounding 10 out of 12 championships and kind of becoming this larger-than-life figure?
Well, I think it's a great point because I think a lot of it goes back to John Wooden. And ironically, it's probably the one thing about the evolution of basketball that he disdained the most. I remember sitting in his den with him one time, and I said to him, what trend in basketball upsets you the most? And he gave me a one-word answer: showmanship. And it was really the advent of television that he thought was the root of a lot of that that culture. And it was surrounded by the coach and coaches behaving in a way on the sidelines that made it easy for the cameras to find them, and coarsening the culture as John Wood saw it around the program, he around the game of basketball. He had a very low opinion of professional basketball. In fact, at one point, Jack Kent Cook, the owner of the Lakers, tried to hire Wooden to be the coach of the Lakers and threw an obscene amount of money at him, and Wooden turned him down. Wooden never made more than $12,500 a year. That was his salary his final year at UCLA. It was just, basketball evolved into something that he never envisioned. This is a guy who was born in 1910, central Indiana, on a small farm with no electricity or running water, and was a high school English teacher who kind of fell into becoming a full-time basketball coach and came out to Los Angeles at a time when he didn't think he would stay, and he just created this monster. And, it certainly created something that he would never recognize.
After he left, UCLA was now, established for all time as one of the titans in college basketball, and you would see Wooden around, on the sideline in retirement. I read that he, kind of jokingly, but in his 90s, offered to come be an assistant coach. Why did he leave at sort of the height of his power?
Well, as he put it to his players when he told them that he was stepping down, he said, I'm bowing out, not because I want to, but because I have to. It had just gotten too difficult and gotten to be too much. In fact, I think he would have probably retired the year before, except they did not win. That was Bill Walton's senior year. They actually lost at the Final Four to North Carolina State in double overtime, and I think he and his wife both felt like they didn't want that to be his last game. He had a lot of health issues, suffered a minor heart attack, and had a lot of trouble sleeping. He had his insecurities and he was thin-skinned, and he knew that the expectations were just obscene. I mean, on the one hand, first, for a long time, he couldn't win the big one. Then, when he started winning, he would lose once in a while, and people would say, what's wrong with you when you lose? Then he got the win so big that people said he's ruining the game of basketball because it's not interesting anymore. So there was a lot for him to deal with. And then, once he was done coaching, he hung around. I mean, he shared an office with the guy who succeeded him, Gene Bartow. He went to the games. One of Bartow's first games the year after the season after Wooden retired, the team did really well, and a reporter went up to John Wooden in the stands and said, "What do you think?" And he said, "Well, I sure didn't leave the cupboard bare, did I?" I mean, he wanted people to remember him, even though there was never a chance that anybody would forget him. But that, I think, that insecurity, and it drove him to tell stories about his life that were not true. I mean, he told the story that he told the rest of his life about how he came to decide to retire, that it was came to him as he was walking off the court at the 74 Final Four after losing and feeling uncomfortable about going to see the press, and if I feel this way, then I should retire. And I mean, this was the least spontaneous man on the planet. That decision was in the works since well before the season. And the story in itself was great enough. I mean, he announced after that game that the Monday game against Kentucky would be his last. He felt unburdened at having revealed at what had been in the works for a long time. They had this dramatic game against Kentucky, his very last coach. They win it. He wins his 10th NCAA championship. He retires. That's an extraordinary story. Why do you have to go make up a reason for how you came about that decision? Well, the answer is because John Wooden was complicated. You know, he was a complicated man. And you know, that's one of the things that I discovered writing this book, that, you know, we're not so meet the eye. And it's the biographer's mission to dig deeper and find the truth and tell the truth in a way that's accurate and thorough, but most important, that's in context. And I believe that's what I've done.
We're speaking with Seth Davis, the author of Wooden, A Coach's Life. Seth, you are a hero here in the Albany area because of the way you backed Siena College on CBS's Selection Sunday a few years back during one of that school's great runs in the NCAA tournament. What are some of the teams you have an eye on this year as we creep ever closer to March Madness?
Well, it's funny how fans' opinions of me seem to correlate pretty directly with my opinion of their team. So when I say good things about someone's team, I'm a great guy, and then when I say something not so good, then I'm a hater. So there's no, you know, it's a fraction of a fraction of what John Wooden had to deal with back in the day, I suppose. We've got two in the top 10 of the polls who I think are very legitimate Final Four contenders. Wichita State obviously went to the Final Four last year. Return many of their players in the backcourt, at least. And San Diego State, I mean, what Steve Fisher has done there after losing his best player, Jamal Franklin, was a first-round NBA draft pick. For them to be back in the top 10, he's recruiting at an unbelievable clip. And, you know, I think Gonzaga is still going to be there. UMass has been a pleasant surprise. So that's the great thing about the NCAA tournament, is someone's going to emerge that we're not expecting. You know, somewhere there's a Florida Gulf Coast out there who's just going to take us completely by surprise and charm the pants off of us. And that's why March Madness is so great. You don't know where that's coming from, but you know that it's coming.
Which leads to my next question. Do you think the tournament format has to be tweaked at all? There's been a lot of talk in recent years about, you know, maybe it's time to expand. Maybe it's not time to expand.
Well, they did expand. Of course, they added four teams. It used to be 64, now it's 68. So when they went through that, they talked about going to 96 teams, which I think just would have been an epic disaster. I think it would have, you know, it's hard enough for the college basketball regular season to gain relevance. The fact that they resisted that, I think, is great. You know, if anything, I would even shrink the field a little bit. I mean, I think you don't want to dilute the thing. You don't want to mess with what's working. It's a three-week extravaganza. If you added, you know, so many more games, I think people would tune out and rob the tournament of its essence. So I think expansions, and they're always going to look at it. They're always looking to, you know, get the highest possible market value for the tournament. But I think it's pretty tabled for now.
We're speaking here on public radio, and I would venture to guess that many of our listeners, if I said the name Lanny Davis, would know he's a political hand who worked in the Clinton White House. That's your father. I'm wondering, what was it that led you to, you know, sports and sports writing as opposed to politics?
Well, you know, my dad's a lawyer, and he always told me not to go to law school. So that was part of the influence. And, you know, my dad is a big sports fan, and he's a big fan of writers and newspapers. You know, his favorite movie, and we watched a million times with me growing up, was All the President's Men. You know, for a time, he actually owned a little suburban newspaper in Maryland. He was actually the chairman of the newspaper at Yale, the Yale Daily News. And one of the reasons why he's so good at what he does is he understands and really respects and really reveres great reporting. So, you know, we grew up going to Redskins games and Washington Bullets games, and, you know, became a huge sports fan. So he's been nothing but encouraging. But by the same token, I am still a political junkie, and I'm very interested in politics. And, you know, I think it's very possible that one day I could write something in that sphere as well. So you never know where life's going to take you.
That brings up one part of John Wooden's story, which is that he did not have a great relationship with many of the reporters who were around him. What did you find about the journalistic relationship with John Wooden as you reported this book? And did it give you any pause as someone who practices college basketball journalism?
Well, again, once I dug deep into the man and really kind of understood what made him tick, I mean, he was very protective of his players, but he was protective of himself, and he was protective of his program. So, you know, I don't think he had any bad relationships with journalists, but it did get to a point towards the end of his championship run when, I mean, they were such a huge dynasty and such a huge story, and the NCAA tournament was literally exploding around UCLA, that people started to resent him because He would not let writers into his dressing room. He felt like that was improper, impolite, and he knew that they would just go to talk to one or two stars, and he was worried that other people would be resentful. So he was a very controlling man, like a lot of great coaches are. So, in fact, at the end, the NCAA actually had to pass a rule mandating that coaches allow writers into their locker room during the NCAA tournament, and the chairman of the committee came right out and said we had to make that rule because of John Wooden. So, you know, it was definitely a delicate balance. You know, all in all, he was highly thought of. He was polite. He was gentlemanly, but he also had a program to run, and he was in charge of the program, and his agenda oftentimes did not coincide with the writer's agenda, and certainly nothing has changed in that regard.
Seth Davis is the author of Wooden, A Coach's Life, and he also is a senior writer for Sports Illustrated and appears on CBS Sports. Seth, it's been a pleasure to speak with you, and if you ever get out to see some America East or MAC action, you'll have to come say hi.
I appreciate it, and really appreciate the chance to come on your show and talk about the book.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.